Blog Talk Radio.
Cindy Sansom Braff, author of Grant Me a Higher Love, How to Go from the Relationship from Hell to One That's Heaven Sent by Scaling the Ladder of Love. That's a big title. It's a big book. Love's a big topic. The music you heard at the beginning of the show is called Eagerly Please, composed with love by my nephew, Miles Sebastian. Thank you for joining us tonight. We've missed you. We've had a little break for the holidays, and we're really glad to be back. I'm a woman on a mission, and that mission is to have you and everyone else have the best love life possible in this new millennium. But before this can happen, you're going to have to learn a few new tricks. Joining me tonight, as always, my beautiful host, Nicole. She's a young woman, a writer, an entrepreneur, and a lesbian, not necessarily in that order. And she's here to share her love stories and war stories with us. She's the voice that will make all of us women stop blaming everything on the opposite sex, since Nicole knows women are making some of the same mistakes in their relationships with each other. Kim's also a beautiful woman as well. She's a divorced mother of two. She will share the secrets that she's heard men utter about love, relationships, and marriage, and she's learned these from being a topless dancer in a gentleman's club. She's also a hairdresser, so she hears plenty of gossip in that vein as well. This is a call-in show, and our call-in number is 646-929-0958. Before we start the show, I do want to thank all of you for voting for me for Best Psychic 2010. John Edwards got the number one slot. I got number two, and I'm so happy. I couldn't have done it without all of your votes and support. And also, I want to thank everyone who's just sent me a gazillion emails about my father's passing on Saturday. It has been a hard week. And I wrote the show about human kindness before I had the experience with my father and the callousness of the hospital. And it was very timely thing to happen because it made me really think about sometimes it's just in those moments when life really is bad, when we could just use a kind word or someone to go that little extra mile. And what I found is, yes, all my clients, my friends, my family have all been more than wonderful to me, and I really appreciate that. But what's happened in America is it's a very technologically advanced world right now, and some of it's not good in terms of someone passing. It used to be a few weeks before bank accounts would be frozen, Social Security would be after you, paperwork would have to be filled out. My father's body wasn't even cold when Roslyn Savings Bank froze his account. Bills had to be paid. Things had to be taken care of. Seems like we need a little time to mourn, and that, yeah, you can do all this at a push of a button, but I was not prepared to handle all of the things that I had to do at that quick a pace. And that made me cry, I just put my head down the desk and cried. This is ridiculous. You're not even giving me a minute to mourn, and I have to be all dealing with paperwork. So anyway, I know that we have a special guest today. Nicole or Kim, you want to explain who this very special guest is, or he can explain himself as well?
I'll explain for him. Tonight, as a lot of our consistent listeners know, they've heard me speak about somebody who I refer to as my guru, David. Who
actually, your prophet, you refer to him as.
He's my prophet. And many of you have learned the advice that he has dispensed to me over the course of the last few months since we started our friendship. And tonight, since I know that in David's life he's had many experiences in which he has been just unconditionally kind to others and has also been bestowed unconditional kindness, I thought that it was a good idea for maybe David to share some of his experience tonight. So tonight we have David.
Okay, David,
hello.
We're so happy to have you here. And, you know, human kindness is the highest evolution of a human being. Sometimes people mistake kindness as weakness. I would not advise people to do that. Kindness is in itself a gift to give to people. every situation is better off if we can be kind. And David, can you share some of your experiences with the emotion of kindness or the sentiment that we know as kindness?
Absolutely. What I would say, first and foremost, even in your introduction talking about the unexpected death of your father, and the introduction of technology that sort of robs us of our sense of kindness and humanity, I think, you know, technology is wonderful. You know, I'm in support of it. At the same time, when I'm not in support of, and I know I've listened to your previous shows and how you've all stated, even in the one show you're talking about, breaking up with people through email. You know, like, that's sort of robbing us of an experience in life that we could grow from had it been face-to-face.
Right.
So,
and that's a very good point, you know, face-to-face.
Yeah, and especially in dealing with the passing of a loved one, I mean, I would think, is there any more pivotal of a moment in life than when someone you love, rather, dies?
Right, and I think human kindness is one of those things that we need from the moment we're born to the moment we die. And
absolutely.
And the hospital settings are something, you know, I was a person, you know, my daughter's going to be 30 in February, who didn't want to give birth in hospitals. And back 30 years ago, boy, that was like, you're like just not going to find, you know, a birthing center or a birthing room. They didn't exist. And so I took her outside of the medical world and had her delivered by midwives in Manhattan. And she did swallow some meconium, and she was, you know, taken to the hospital. And I had been in labor for 25 hours, had not slept in maybe 35 or 40 hours, whatever it was, got dressed, went over to Lenox Hill Hospital, because that's where she was. And when I went into the rooms, I said to the doctor, I have to sit down. And they said, you didn't give birth in our hospital. You have no right to sit down. Now,
well, there you
talk about, they didn't like that I was a woman that was taking money outside of their system. And it was not my choice not to give birth. I would have preferred a birthing room in a hospital, but they didn't exist, nor would they, couldn't find any doctor to deliver naturally. And that was my choice. It's women like me that changed that system. But during the time that my daughter was ill, I was treated like a leper in the hospital for 5 days. And these are things that have to be from the moment we're born and the moment we die. Kindness is always appreciated.
I would absolutely agree.
And so those are times when I could have used some kindness. And, you know, I was explaining to Kim and those of you who read my little newsletter, you know, no one had told me my father had died when I walked into that room. And I was not prepared for what I saw. And although he looked very peaceful, and I'm grateful for the white light that surrounded him, and that he did look very peaceful. And the universe was kind to me by not having me see him at those last agonizing hour, probably of his death, because it would have been hard for me to not have him resuscitated or not to have them do some things just because that's how we feel. And I know that's not what he wanted. And I did get to see the moment of peace, and I did get to be alone with him, which now I see is a wonderful thing. But walking into that room was quite shocking. And no one came down to the room for 10 or 15 minutes, and I sent TJ down the hall to find somebody to confirm that my father were in fact dead, because he certainly didn't look it. He looked peaceful and he was warm. And those are the kinds of things, had there been someone to greet me with a word, you know, before I walked in the room, or even a post-it on the door saying, do not enter, first come to the nursing station. I mean, it was just simple things. And all I kept being happy was that it wasn't my niece who had come there the day before who would have been the one to find him or see him that way. So, again, it's just kindness, just thinking what that other person. I know in a hospital, oftentimes people deal with death every day, so it becomes just another day at work. And yet, if it were their father or their child or their loved one, it wouldn't just seem like another day at work. And all of us in the healing profession have to remember it's not just another day for most people. And Kim, you were saying your mom was a similar experience, which I couldn't believe you had a similar experience as well.
Yes, I had a similar experience. It was quite shocking and traumatic for me, because I did not know my mother was deceased when I got up to the hospital either. So walking in on that was pretty traumatic.
And yours was even
like
much
that.
More so because your mom's was sudden and my father.
Yeah.
I thought he
but
was.
But I do have to say, in all of that, I kind of look at other people and I say I have to understand that I can't expect other people to behave as I would because different people deal with different things. They were kind to me in the hospital, you know, trying to gather my thoughts. And as you, I did not have a lot of time. There was a lot of paperwork involved, and I was not familiar with all the procedures of all this, and I kind of had to take the reins because I am the only girl out of my five brothers, and they just were not composed. And I did my grieving after.
Right,
and of
but
course,
it's hard to do all
I
of that.
I still do. And I kept my composure, and I did very well under the circumstances. But at the same time, in all the rest of the days gone by, I had so much kindness showed to me from people that I hadn't seen in years or heard from. Or it was just pretty miraculous, the amount of people that supported, you know, and encouraged me and let me cry on their shoulders, so to speak, and still do to this day, that I was so grateful for that. So in the lack of kindness in others, there are kindness, you know, kind people all over surrounding you, and that's what I was grateful for.
And
so,
again, during this, for me, I realized I did have to call the hospital the next day, and as kindly as I could say it, say this should never happen to another human being. You have to have some sort of checks and balances here so that, you know, if my mother, who is in hospice care and she couldn't walk in there, but if she were the one, I know my mother very well. If my mother had been the one walking in and finding my father like that, she would have collapsed with a heart attack. She would never have been able to handle that. And so I said, you had better just be careful in the future because not everyone is strong enough to witness this or to see it. And in the future, be a little more careful and don't assume. I mean, what the nurse said when she came into the room was, well, we thought he had no family, which I just thought, well, we've all been visiting, and you certainly have my number anytime he needs a test. You call me in 2 seconds. But, you know, at that point, she didn't offer any apologies or whatever, and I realized it was because she thought she was in big trouble. So, again, I'm sorry from her would have been appreciated. You know, just, oh, boy, we messed up here. You know, sometimes just saying the words, we made a mistake, we messed up, is helping, you know, saying you're sorry when something has been done. Now, David, what's your background? Because I'm not familiar with what you do when you're not a prophet.
Well, first and foremost, let me say any title that Nicole so generously applies to me is just that. It's overly generous.
It's not overly generous. He's very
David
talented.
Has a lot of insight.
And talent.
Wow.
But continue.
I was just going to say, yeah, I'm, I currently teach children music, so that's
wow,
what I do
wonderful.
For a living right now. And I'm an artist as well, so I love to express myself any way creatively that I can. But I find usually most of the time what I consider my real job and my real profession is finding every opportunity I can to just be of service to people and to encourage people, you know, because I don't think there's enough of that going on, and it's something I feel extraordinarily passionate about. And I think the reason why I felt such a connection with Nicole, which was hugely ascribed to and was a perfect illustration of the law of attraction at work, was is merely because sometimes when you do meet people, you know, you're attracted to the same people that are here to do the same things you are.
Absolutely. And that makes the task a little bit easier. Here with like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you notice in the description of the show, I said some of us have that all human beings have a mean streak in them. It is, in truth, it's something we all must face. Some of us have a mean streak that is as thin as a hair. Other people's is as deep and wide as a river. Now, that was one of the things that was channeled to me this year, that human beings do have this mean streak. We see it in children. You know, David, you teach music, and some children seem to have an absence of meanness or a minimum of it, and other children just seem to have a lot of it.
Sure.
And, you know, that's part of their karma from other lifetimes. it doesn't necessarily mean we can be mean because our siblings teach us that. I mean, sometimes people who have brothers and sisters can be meaner than other people. Only children sometimes lack that sort of mean attackness, and they have trouble with other children because they're just not really used to all of that meanness. But it's something that we all have to be conscious of. And meanness can manifest itself in gossipy, being gossipy and judgmental, you know, sort of saying that biting comment at the moment you just know that's going to really pierce that person's heart. And we all know which words heal and which words hurt. And when we want to be mean, we all know how to be mean. And so I think this is the year 2010, if all of our listeners can sort of make this pact with us, that we're all going to try not to be mean. And even when we feel that impulse to be mean, we're going to be aware of it, maybe take a breath, go for a walk, think before we say something, think before we act. Because once we've said those words, once we've done those harsh things, we can never take them back.
You know, it's funny, Cindy, today, of course, everybody wants to know, they're so excited about the topic of the show and what have you, and my biggest thing today in the last, you know, couple days is, well, it's New Year's, what's going to be new this year, you know, and everybody was, oh, my resolution is this, and oh, my resolution is that. I said, well, resolution is kind of black and white. And I said, and all, you know, sometimes when you have a resolution and you don't fulfill that, you kind of beat yourself up, and then it just makes things worse. So what's your New Year's intention this year? Because with intentions, you're going to put your best foot forward and intend on doing the best you possibly can. And that would be your main goal. And people are laughing at me, you know, and I said, this is my intention this year. And
it's a very,
you know,
good one. It's a very wise one, because intentions, if we can always see to our intentions to help, our intention to hurt. And
I tell people all the time, a lot of people are mean because they're not so happy with inside themselves. And they project it onto other people. If other people are hurting, then they won't hurt so much.
Right, because and hurt people hurt people.
And I tell people all the time, I said, well, in order to change your life, sometimes you just need to change one thing at a time. It only takes us one thing at a time. And I encourage people to sometimes, you know, a small random act of kindness. It could be a word. It could be you look super today to a stranger.
Could be opening the door for someone who's got packages. It's a stranger. You don't have to open that door for them.
You know,
but
and random acts of kindness I do encourage all the time. Because even in my moments of despair or suffering, something so small has made me smile and has brought joy to my heart. So kind of pay it forward.
Pay it forward. And that was a very good sentiment, and I think we could all use to do those kind things. And, you know, my father was a man who was a very mixed bag of tricks. He could be the kindest man in the world. He could be the meanest son of a bitch you ever wanted to encounter. And so when we bury parents that we have mixed feelings about, it's a little bit harder sometimes than when you bury someone that you just loved. You know what to feel. And, you know, my father was not particularly nice to me a few weeks prior to his dying. And, you know, he was not supposed to be resuscitated when he went to the hospital. And Cynthia, his aide, who's a beautiful woman from Africa, had not given the living will or the DNR. And I did not know my father had a living will. I knew he had the DNR, but the living will was with his will. And I didn't find that until after he died. So all of the things they did, in his living will, they weren't supposed to give him antibiotics or keep him on any kind of ventilators or any of that. Anyway, he was kept semi-comatose for 10 days sedated because he had such bad pneumonia and sepsis. He had broken his arm the week before and somehow came down with sepsis and pneumonia. And on the 10th day when he emerged, he was his mean self calling me up saying this: how dare you not be here to bring my shoes and my slippers, and where were you, and how come you're not here, and where are my shoes, and where? Get them right here right now. That's my father. So I rushed them there and realized the man is not ever getting out of his bed again. And so I looked at him and I said, okay, Daddy, I brought your stuff. It's here. And he calmed down. And then over a period of the 2 weeks, a great deal of peace was made between us as he went in and out of different states of consciousness. And had he not lived that month, he would not have lived to say to me, thank you, and I'm sorry. And I often didn't do the best that I could, but I tried. And he was able to go on the cell phone to tell my mother that he loved her. And I was able to tell him that we were taking care of him, and Cynthia wanted to talk to him, his aide. And when I had to go back to my mother's house, because that's where I had been before, and it was only 10 minutes from my father's hospital, I said to Cynthia, I'm sorry, but my father died. And she fell to her knees, and she said, oh, God, the kindest man I have ever known has just died. And I thought, somewhere along the line, he learned something for somebody. And I would never tell her that, no, he isn't the kindest man, and he never was. But to her, he was. And to my mother in her dying days, he has been. And so there was an example of how he had been kind to this woman who was his aide, and how different it would have been if he had been mean and ornery to her, as she wouldn't care that he's gone. So kindness is one of those things that touches all of us when we have been treated with kindness and generosity. So this is a time when all of us can sort of recognize that, yeah, we can be mean, and sometimes the first response we want to do is be mean. But why don't we try to look at maybe why someone's doing something, and like Kim said, sometimes they're hurting, sometimes they're not happy. So does anybody have any suggestions for how things we can do, little things, big things, on a day-to-day basis to make this world a kinder place? Throw it out there to my three co-hosts tonight. Or any anecdotes when somebody's been kind to you or whatever?
I'm sure Nicole has something.
I love how the two just throw me under the bus. yeah, seriously, I have both of them.
He did it
like
with kindness. He threw you under the bus with kindness.
Yes, it was a very loving shove. That was fine. Do I have any suggestions to how people can be kind? First and foremost, I think it's important that people treat others as they would wish to be treated. I think that if there was ever, you know, a daydream of, you know, what you would want somebody to do for you, try to manifest that daydream unto yourself by doing it for another person. And I could honestly say that just like Kim was talking about random acts of kindness today, in a conversation at my store this afternoon, I was speaking to a young man, and he was talking about his job and said that he wasn't making enough money, that he should just go and sell drugs, he said, you know, kind of sarcastically, half joking, half serious. And I said, well, don't do that. I said, that's bad karma. He goes, I already have bad karma. It's not going to matter. And I said, sweetheart, I said, it's never too late. I said, the perfect way, and then he goes, well, how do you undo bad karma? I said, the perfect way to do that is just to do something nice for somebody else and expect nothing in return, and then be shocked and surprised and just in complete awe when it is.
That was wonderful advice, especially to young people. We can always help young people. I know as a child it was the adults who were so kind to me in the neighborhood, or teachers who were kind to me. Those affect us a lot in our lives. We remember that. And one of the wonderful things about life reviews is when we die, we see all the bad things we've done, of course, and we see all the alternative things we could have done if we weren't afraid and if we loved more and if we made better choices. But we also get to see all the acts of kindness we did that we forgot.
You know, Cindy, a long time ago when I was about, I would say 17 years old, I wasn't on the best path in life.
As a lot of 17-year-olds.
Okay, I chose to live a life outside of the comforts of home because that my behavior wasn't acceptable, and I understand that now years later. And it was a very unpleasant place that I was living with no heat.
Oh, boy.
And this was my choice.
And a cold night like that tonight.
And it was Christmas Day, and I had nowhere to go. And I was living in this very unpleasant, cold place with no heat. And somebody came to the door, well, what would be a door if there was one there, and said, you're coming to my house for Christmas. And I said, but I don't know anybody there. I don't know your family. I don't know anything about you know, they don't know me. Why would they want me in that house? And they took me in on Christmas, and they had gifts for me, and they fed me, and they were kind to me, and they accepted me, knowing my circumstances. And that was something that I'll never forget. And I'll have to say that, you know, it did change me a little bit, you know, my perception of people at that moment, because there wasn't a lot of nice people in my life. And I thought that everybody was the same at that point. And here was this really generous family, you know, that just opened their door to a stranger. And I'll never forget it. And it did, you know, leave a lasting impression. Obviously, it's 20 or so years later. And still thinking about it brings joy to my heart.
Wow.
I would like to add something to mind.
Go ahead.
To fully illustrate that Kim is an individual who actually learns things.
Bravo.
Unlike some of us who go through bullshit, so to speak, and then we get angry at everybody
bullshit
else around
again.
And then we blame everybody and we don't learn anything and repeat our mistakes over and over.
Wow.
And the instance that she just described, what I would like to say is I haven't been getting along with my own family for many, many years. And I've just been avoiding all holidays altogether. You know, at my own, pretty much at my own family detriment at that point. But really, what it boiled down to was I figured, well, hell with holidays altogether. You know, it's just another day of the year. It doesn't matter. But deep down, everybody knows that at that time, when those times come around, if you look around you and you don't see what you'd like to see, no matter how much you may try to avoid it, it's going to be staring you straight in the face.
Absolutely.
And the thing that blew my mind was, even though I have known Kim in passing for a while, she made the same invitation to me to enter her home and sit at her dinner table with her family and Nicole, and she took care of me, you know, and she loved me.
And made you feel
me.
Like a king, because everybody feels like a king or a queen at Kim's house.
And I will tell you this, I have never felt as loved or at peace within myself, and I don't even remember how long. And that's just goes to show you that Kim is somebody who actually learns. She appreciates things, and then she does what she can to give that back. If you want to talk about the law of karma, if you want to talk about the law of attraction, I don't even know of a better example than that. So I just wanted to say that. And very quickly, I'm not trying to eat up airtime, but
yes, you can certainly.
But there is an old story that I loved, and I don't know its origins, but it's a very short story, and I'll try to do my best to give it justice. But basically, a long time ago, in another country, there was a village, and there was an old woman in the village. And she was pretty poor, but she was content, happy with her life, because she had within her inner peace, she had within her love, you know, she had everything that she needed. So really, she never looked outside of herself for anything. So what ends up happening is one day she takes a trip outside of the village, as she usually did, once every Sunday or so, to just go and just be in nature and to be with God. And one day she discovers an extremely rare jewel alongside the road. And she picks it up and she realizes what it is. And she realizes, wow, you know, this could make me rich for the rest of my life, but it's so beautiful. And I don't really need the money. So I'm just going to hold on to it as a symbol of abundance and to remind me of the beauty of God. So shortly after, as she's returning to town, she's sitting admiring this jewel, and a beggar who has much less than her comes along and says, wow, that stone, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And he thinks to himself, if I were to have that, I could live like a king for the rest of my life. So he goes over in humility, and he says, please, can I have that stone? I have nothing to offer you in exchange, but please. And if she says, of course. And she gives him the stone. And he wanders off, and she goes back to her home. A week later, on her normal Sunday excursion, she goes back into the countryside and meets up with the beggar again. And the beggar says, I've been looking for you everywhere. And she goes, why? And he goes, I wanted to give you back your stone. And she goes, why? You could have lived a great life of wealth. And he goes, no, you have something else that I want much, much more. That's way more valuable. please, please give to me whatever is within you that enabled you to hand me that stone.
Wow.
And I thought that was a beautiful story.
It is a beautiful story. And again, giving is the key. You know, sometimes we have to give and we have to do things for people without them asking. That would be an act of kindness. How many times do you see someone and they're really having trouble, they're struggling with something, or, you know, they're on the side of the road, you know, changing their tire and you can see the jack isn't working right and you know you have a good jack. Could you just stop and help, you know, without the person asking? You know, old souls, and most of us, a lot of us are old souls. We've had many, many lifetimes. One of the things old souls do is they don't really like to ask for help. And so it's nice if someone sees you struggling and they come over and say, well, I know how to do that, or do you need me to help you? And when I was doing the children's entertainment, I would carry about 100 pounds of stuff between the tape players and the bags of stuff with the face paints and the instruments for the kids. And it would always be the 90-year-old grandmother that would offer to help carry. Not the men, not the able-bodied people. 90-year-old grandmother would offer to carry my bags.
You know what? I have a similar story to that, Cindy. A couple of weeks ago, Kim and I had a Christmas party to go to. And we got all dressed up, and we looked absolutely fabulous. And Kim decides that, you know, we're going to take the Corvette that day. So we're driving in this nice vehicle, and all of a sudden, we need air in the tires. So we pull over into a gas station, and it's pouring outside, There is rain just dripping from every alcove, everywhere you can see. And me and Kim are outside. Kim is in a mink coat. I am in a $700 Coach coat. And we're outside in the rain, filling the tires with air. And then there are four guys pumping gas underneath the dry gas tank thing, saying, wow, those girls are hot.
When did they come over and help?
Nobody came over to help us.
But your beauty probably just scared the hell out of them.
Well, Cindy, what I say is we are two capable, competent women. And I was very happy to fill the air in my vehicle.
Yes, absolutely. But I just think that it's hysterical that, you
well,
know, in the mechanics of it all.
My hair was a mess after that. My clothes were ruined.
But if someone had helped you without you asking,
it would have been
beautiful.
I do have to say, in the last year, I have been shown more kindness and generosity more than I've ever received in my life.
No, because you've been giving a lot, and it's coming back.
And I am so appreciative to all the people that are in my life. And like Dave says, my life, I live my life by the law of attraction. And we'll have to do a show on that, because a lot of people are a little confused as to what that is. And it's what, you know, you do for yourself and you do for others comes back to you tenfold. And there's little stories in the Bible about that. It's like attracts like. And you are just surrounded by so many different things that you haven't seen before when you change your life.
Right.
And, you know, we're coming up on a one-year anniversary of our show. And this is our actually 45th
wow.
show, which I was surprised at today, and I said, my God, in the last year, I've made so many tremendous changes, and I'll have to go back and listen to the first show as opposed to, you know, the last couple shows,
right,
and people said to me, my God, Kim, you're a different person.
Yeah, and that's what it's about. If each week we do something that's an act of kindness or an act of let's grow as human beings, it will make its little headways in changing us. And, you know, there's some kind things we could do. I happen to live in a little co-op, and people in my co-op are so incredibly kind. And, you know, TJ has a dog, and we wanted to go to the city and stay overnight. And the last time we paid for a sitter in Montauk to watch the dog when we went to Gurney's, it wasn't 5 minutes when they called us. The dog was lost in Montauk, which is not a place that you want to lose a dog. So we had to go rushing back, The dog was found, but the dog sitter who was paid, mind you, didn't tell us that the dog got caught and he needed like 15 stitches when we brought him in. Of course, no apologies from her, and of course she took the money for dog sitting, and now we were afraid to even leave the dog. And I said to him, I bet you Jen would watch the dog who lives right next door to me, because she has a dog and she's like really a kind person. He goes, well, we don't know her that well. We can't really ask her. And I said, well, I don't know. And somehow he was out there talking and mentioned that we were going and the dog needed a place to sit, somewhere to stay. And she, of course, offered, without us asking, to watch the dog. And, you know, TJ was a little nervous. He goes, oh, I don't know Jen. What if she? I said, Jen is a really good person. And the next day when we came back, Jen told us the story of how Bo slept in the bed with Jen. Mm-hmm. And she went out of her way to make him feel really safe and take really good care of him. And so as a favor, I gave her a tarot card reading in return. So sometimes if someone will just watch our pets or, you know, watch our children for us or, you know.
I do have another pretty amazing story. Anybody who's been following the show or following my life, so to speak, knows I've had, you know, some problems with my neighbors over the last several years. And we had this tremendous snowstorm.
Which makes life a lot harder. I have nice neighbors,
yes.
My life's a lot easier. When you
yes.
don't have nice neighbors, life's a lot harder.
So here I am. I'm outside. I'm like, oh, my God, I gotta shovel the snow. I have my 12-year-old son out there helping me 5 minutes. He's like, whew, this is hard. I'm out there for 2.5 hours shoveling, and I'm saying, God. And I stopped shoveling. I put the shovel in the snow. I said, God, I wish somebody would just help me with this. This is, I'm a single parent. I just wish somebody would help me with this. And lo and behold, 5 of my neighbors who hate me came over and shoveled the rest of my driveway.
And it's a big driveway.
And it's a very large 70-foot driveway.
They don't hate you that much.
And I laughed, and anybody who followed my babysitter story with the babysitter robbing me and whatnot, it was her family that came over to help me. And I thanked them. I said, that was very kind of you. I do thank you. And in my small wish to God to have somebody just help me, you know, I just wanted help. They said, go in the house, take a break, we'll do the rest.
But you
and they
see,
shoveled the rest of my driveway.
It's very important because my husband was disabled, so I would be
And although I've had my discrepancies with them, it was a catastrophe at that point because out here we had probably 5-foot snowdrifts.
Yeah, you did, yeah.
And I said, you know, in the person that I am, and I laugh, I say it's pretty hard for people to hate me because they don't show hate back, and I never will.
And that's why they did it, because they know that you were a good person.
And I thank God for the help.
Right. And, of course, you know, when Howie was disabled when I was married, and he had an artificial leg. So I would be out there shoveling, and later on he got a snowblower because I could help. But the times I'd be out there shoveling, it'd be like 10 feet of snow. And, of course, I wouldn't ask my neighbors. But lo and behold, the man in the neighborhood would always come over with a shovel and help me. And those are the things you don't forget. And I always try to repay them by doing a kids' party for them for free. I always try to pay back in some way with something that I can do. You know, they can't entertain at their kids' parties, but I know how to do that. I can do that. And so sometimes if someone does an act of kindness for you, you can figure out what can I do for that person in return. Because that's what's a little bit missing in America. There isn't so much of that neighbors helping neighbors the way it used to be. And that made life easier. We didn't, you know, now everybody has, you know, 2 cars. People didn't always have 2 cars. Everybody seems to have, you know, enough of everything, and they never have to borrow anything or whatever. But we do need that community, the ability to ask a neighbor, could you, you know, I have to run out to the doctor for a minute. Could you watch my child for an hour? Or, you know, you're going to the store and I don't feel well. Could you pick up something for me? Those are always nice little things that make you feel better. You know, any of us who's ever been sick, and, you know, you can't use it sick to even go out and get the cold medicine. If a friend called and you said, oh, God, I'm sick, and I'm too tired, I can't even get the medicine, and all of a sudden your friend's at the door with chicken soup and NyQuil, you know, you feel like you won the lotto. So it's always just, you know, sometimes people aren't going to ask you, but you can always say, do you need my help? And
I do believe that a lot of people are so involved in their own lives that they don't even see outside of what's going on in their own lives. And that makes them very selfish, which is fine. I'm not in judgment of that. But if you just step outside the box a little bit, just a little bit, maybe your life will change, even if it's to help somebody else. You don't know what that can bring to your life. And I said something to somebody who's in great despair today, and he doesn't know what he wants out of his life, and he's having a horrible marriage, and you know, his kids are creating havoc. And he said, I just want so much. I said, but until you realize what it is that you want in your life won't change. And then I said, do something kind for a stranger. Start with that and see what that'll bring back to you.
Right, and that's really nice when you just do something spontaneous. Do something nice for people.
And this doesn't have to cost anything.
No, it doesn't have to be
a big
thing.
I always have to remind people of that. It doesn't have to cost anything. Just sentiment, a heart, and some thought.
Well, even sometimes when you're out in Montauk and, you know, we'll be at a bar or something, and all of a sudden the fishermen come in and they've had a good run. And the first thing they do is buy everyone a beer. They're so grateful, these fishermen, because their life is so hard, you know, and it's dangerous out there. And if they've caught a lot of fish and they're actually making money, they just want to give something. And even though it's only a beer, whether you want it or not, it's just that little act of feeling a sense of community with these other people who you don't even know. I don't know these people. I've never met them before in my life. And yet they're so grateful for their good fortune, and they just want to share a little bit. So sometimes it's just, you know, buying someone a glass of wine or buying them a Starbucks or a cup of coffee or making them a cup of coffee. These are little things, you know, baking some cookies and bringing them to work. That's a little bit of kindness. It makes the day a little bit better. So whatever you can do to bring into your workplace sometimes some kindness, and in a workplace, and Kim can relate to this, why don't you bring a smile? Why don't you not gossip? Why don't you bring laughter? Why don't you bring some happiness into the space instead of all negativity? Because that makes a difference. If you have to work somewhere 8 hours a day, if people are happy, you feel happy.
You know, it's funny. I hadn't gone into the salon a lot over the holidays. I worked more at the bar because it was, you know, much
more
to my benefit to do so. And they hadn't seen me in a couple weeks. And I walked in yesterday, and I'm like, Happy New Year. And everybody's like, my God, we missed you.
Okay, can you see?
And I had my country music playing, and they were laughing, oh, we hate this music, and I'm singing, and I'm dancing all over the salon. They're like, we really did miss you, you know, and that felt good. And I went to work today at the bar, and I always tell people, I do have a purpose in life, and my purpose, I feel, is to make people smile, even if it's just for a moment, even if it's just for a fantasy, even if it's reality, whatever it is. And, you know, when I send my little cards out to people that I haven't spoken to or seen, out of sight doesn't mean out of mind. And you know what? If I can bring just a small smile and let somebody know that I'm thinking about them, even though they're not around, I know it makes a difference for me.
And I think it's also, sorry, Cindy. I think it's also important because, you know, during the show we had made reference to some, you know, doing something small for somebody. When it comes to kindness, small is the wrong word, okay? Because when it comes to kindness, there are no small acts of kindness. Because what might be small in your eyes might be something that is so spectacular to the person that you're doing it for. You know, I mean, just like Kim said, you know, if she sends a card to somebody, you know, it's a 99-cent card that has, you know, a few kind words in it. It doesn't really cost much, and yeah, that could, to Kim, that might be something small. But to the person who receives that card might be worth $1 million, you know, and it doesn't even have to be anything like that. You know, I mean, there are definitely times where, you know, with Kim and with David where, you know, I was just down and I just needed something, some sign from someone, and one of these two people had just done something, even if it was just to say, I love you. You know, a random drive-by, I love you. You know, but again, it's three uttered words, but they meant the world at the time that I received them. You know, I mean, I specifically remember with David, and David and I, just like him and I, are very, very like in tune telepathically. But I had been at work, and I was having such a hectic, chaotic day. And just as I thought my day could not get any more draining or taxing on me, you know, one of the customers came in who I refer to as an energy vampire, that the moment he walks through the door, I just feel 9 times more fatigued than I was prior to him entering the building. And, you know, I'm just like, I just said, oh, God, how am I going to cope with this? How am I going to do this today? Within minutes, David walks in the door, walks behind my counter, hugs me, then looks at me and says, I just wanted to give you that, and walks out. And that was it. It was a drive-by hug, and you know what? It was like the best hug ever at that point. You know, so it doesn't have to, don't refer to anything that's kind as being small, because, you know, that's a matter of perception.
I'm a big fan of the drive-by hugs, actually.
I like that.
I've been doing that ever since I can remember, and I love it.
It's a drive-by hug. It's great.
And that is very important, because people, physical affection is very important, and for children and for grown-ups, everybody needs a hug. And, you know, I think David, who works with children, I spent a lot of my time working with children. Of course, Nicole works with the kids in the store. And
I work with big kids.
Big kids. And Kim has her children. Maybe we can make this a year where we realize that children tend to see grown-ups as screaming giants. And can we cut them some slack when they're less than perfect? You know, children hear their parents lying all the time and grown-ups lying and getting away with it. But, you know, when children get caught in the smallest of lies, they're, you know, usually pretty, you know, put on the fryer for that one. Sometimes we have to be a little gentler with our children as well. You know, a little kinder, you know, they mess up. You know, most of the time they're pretty hard on themselves about it as well. So just, I remember the times as a child when I knew I did something wrong or I really messed up and I really was expecting, oh, I'm going to get reamed and it's going to be terrible. And maybe it just had, the teacher just had a good day that day and just said, oh, okay. You did, okay, next time you'll do it this way, you'll do it better. And no, you're, you know, it didn't make you feel stupid, you know, like you're not a moron, you're not stupid. This is how you do it, and showed you how to do it rather than berating you for doing something wrong. So if we can all just be a little kinder to children, because they're expected to be perfect. You know, the world is...
Oh, my children are exceptional, but they are not perfect.
Right. Well, yeah.
And I teach them love, and I teach them kindness, and I tell my children all the time, when they tell me children are mean to them, I say, you know, do what mommy does. Be kind back. And my son tells me, but mommy, it still hurts my heart. And I say, you know what, you'll recover. The kindness will help you to recover.
Right, because, and it is one of those things that people do mistake kindness for weakness. It is not a weak thing. Kindness is true strength. Every situation is made better by kindness. Kindness even being staying calm in a situation where you maybe want to scream at somebody, you know, when somebody's just, you know, backed into your brand new car, you know, you might want to scream, you might want to freak out. Sometimes just being calm in that situation, you know, diffusing it, don't making it worse, don't make the person feel worse than they have to, it really helps with life, not to overreact. That's another thing. A lot of people, her hysterical personalities are always overreacting. So is the sky falling? You know, if we could all take it down a notch and be a little calmer, be a little politer. Politeness is kindness. We all love when we're in a family and somebody says, thank you, or please put the dishes in the sink and thank you for doing them. So, you know, being politer, calmer, kinder. Oh, boy, doesn't that make life a nicer place to be?
Well, I think it's important also, Cindy, that, you know, people look out at the world and they see whatever it is that they see. Some people will see a kind world. Some people will see a not-so-kind world. Everybody's vision is different where that's concerned. But just because other people are not, let's say, being kind, or just because they're not showing their greatest side, doesn't really give anybody else permission to do the same. And what it all comes down to, and I forgot who said this, Kim, you might actually know who said this, but we have to be the change that we want to see in the world.
Buddha said that, honey.
Thank you. I wasn't sure. I've been reading so much Buddha, so much Gandhi, I'm confused. But, you know, we have to be the change. And so what? Somebody else is being unkind. So what? Somebody else is having a negative or a poor attitude. Don't be one of the people that people, you know, don't be one of those people that has to do the same thing.
Repeat that phrase so a little slower so people will hear that.
Be the change that you would like to see.
And that's exactly it. And remember, in Grant Me a Higher Love, we talk about how you're only responsible for your behavior. The fact that the person is doing road rage, going insane at you, do you have to...
Oh, I think that's so funny. I laugh at that, Nicole.
Oh, you know what? Let's not even go there right now, okay, with my road rage.
Nicole is a road rage girl.
I've been much better. Yes, I tend to yell and scream in bed in my car.
Why is that okay?
You know what? It's not okay. It is something that slowly but surely I am getting a hold of. And I keep reminding myself of something that my Uncle Mel used to say, who passed a couple of weeks after I was born, but I know that he's one of my angels and guides that's always with me. And sometimes I actually catch myself raging in the car now, you know, now that I am actually becoming more aware of it. And I just kind of have to laugh at myself when I do it. But he always used to tell me, used to tell the entire family, and everybody has passed this piece of information down, that a car is a weapon, and it is a luxury to drive, not a privilege. And if you were completely enraged, you would not any sooner pick up a gun or an axe, and that, you know, we shouldn't really be as careless with our vehicles because, of course, people can get hurt. And you can kill others and you can kill yourself in your vehicle. And, you know, every now and then when I catch myself yelling and screaming and raging in the car about something stupid, I just kind of calm myself down after, you know, I have that initial rush. And then I say, you know what, maybe they're rushing off to something that's more important than where I have to be right now. And if I have to be 5 minutes late so they can get to something that might be pivotal in their life on time, then so be it.
And also, you know, sometimes somebody does something stupid and they almost hit you, but somehow you avoid it. Because you're paying extra attention.
Well, Cindy, I make a joke out of it, and then my kids know this joke now. I said, my car is invisible. It's a very brightly colored car. So I just make a joke. If you make a joke and everybody laughs, it's over. It's a moment.
I think we have a caller, by the way, number 6.
Yes, we do. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year,
Carrie!
Everybody's been asking where you've been. You've been missed. How is your life?
I'm being mean.
Uh-oh. True confessions of Grant Me a Higher Love. Okay. Who are you being mean to? Yourself, your husband, your family, anybody in particular?
I think that I'm being my frustration makes me be mean, you know. I'm so tied up with my family, my mother. I have to take care of her. I have to take care of my brother. And I'm just so deep. I'm falling down. And that makes me be mean, you know. And
well, I don't think you're being mean. I think you're being overworked and maybe taking a little bit of it for granted. And maybe you need to just be honest that you've got too much on your plate. And any person will crack. I mean, there's a point where when we have too much on our plate, yeah, we're going to be mean because we're tired.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you ask or mention that you can't do all this? I mean, is anybody there to help you?
No, unfortunately, no. And I think that...
How old is your brother, by the way?
38.
Oh, well, you know, is he able-bodied?
He's with the family. He has his wife and his son.
So why do you have to help him?
He's not, well, he is a soccer player, and he's having some financial situation down over there. And they, whatever soccer team they play him for, they've not been paying for 3 months, and he needs some money, you know, and I have to take care of that until they got his paycheck, you know, because he haven't get it yet for 3 months. So he has a son, he has a wife. So besides that, my mom, 68, And my stepdaughter is also, I believe she's writing some stuff in her diary saying that I'm ugly and...
How do you know that, Carrie?
Well, maybe
she doesn't want you reading it.
You know what? Yes. I made a mistake, and that's what everything started like 2 months ago. Because I was cleaning her dresser, and I saw her diary, and I saw my name.
And you held the diary, and you said, I probably shouldn't read this, but I'm going to.
Yes, I make a mistake. I recognize that. Much better would it be that I'm not reading it, so would it be
you got even with
a little
you.
Friction.
Okay, Carrie, so you're not, sweetheart, you are not perfect, okay? And children, pre-adolescent children, they are going to say
horrible things.
You know you did it. Give her a little break.
Give her a little break. Some of the horrible things Kim's kids say, and they're great.
You know what? And give her a little more love and show her a little more kindness, and it'll come back.
She don't want a son. She don't want me to be with her dad because she's going to move out of here if I have a baby. Stuff like that. So.
Well, that's too bad because...
Well, you also have to understand that you're dealing with a child who is accepting another mother figure into her life when she already has a mother figure. And at that age, it's not so much that you want to have a baby. It's the fact that right now she's the only baby, and that if you have a child, what it's really more a question of whether or not she's going to get as much love as that child, or whether or not you will take to that child more so than you've taken to her. It's really kind of like a jealousy and a fear thing, more or less. So all you need to do is whenever it comes up in conversation, whenever, you know, you're talking about having a baby or what her plans are going to be if you were to have a child, then tell her that she and that child would be exactly the same and that you would love them both exactly the same.
And you are not the wicked stepmother, nor is she Cinderella.
Exactly, you know, and a nice gesture for you to do, though, Carrie, to kind of say that you're sorry for reading that diary. Why don't you go out and get her new diary that has a lock on it and give her the keys to that lock, you know, and you
don't
know,
make sure a copy.
Make sure it's an industrial lock, though, like get like a master lock through that book or something like that. All right. And give her a new copy with a lock and just say, you know what, sweetie, I'm sorry. And here, this is for the new year. This is for 2010.
Clean slate.
By the way, I think
yep.
we have TJ on number 7. I think he wants to say something. I recognize
I love you, Carrie.
I love you, Carrie.
I love you, Garth. I love you. Bye-bye.
Hello?
Hello,
TJ.
Is it over yet? How are
no,
y'all?
It's about like 2 minutes here.
I just wanted to make a comment. In the last 2 weeks, Cindy's gone through some really trying stuff, and I just was so amazed how strong her character is and what an amazing person I live with.
Oh, thank
and
you.
I have to truly say that I've just been in awe of her strength. And I just wanted to throw it in at the end of the show. I didn't want you guys to have your show.
Oh,
so anyway,
you.
Happy New Year, y'all. And
Happy New Year, TJ.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, that was a kind comment because sometimes, you know, you wonder if you're losing it, you know, at these moments. But, you know, on the way to the senior parlor, I did cry and say, where are my brothers? Why does this just have to be me? And I said, I want my brothers. And he just looked at me because he never heard me ask for my brothers before. But it goes to show you when times get tough, sometimes we really do need those people in our lives, our brothers, our children. And we have 1 minute. I want to thank Dave for joining us. I would love if Dave would come back again. He's such a good light.
That is definitely
a
possibility.
Well, you know, Cindy, this is the first time I had a man in my bedroom in over a year and a half. So things are looking up.
Whoa. Well, that sounds good. Now, we won't ask any more about that.
He's sitting on the floor across the room now. So.
Oh, okay.
Hey, it's a start.
Okay.
I would like to thank everybody who has supported and listened to us over the last year. You guys have all been amazing, women, men, everybody from across the states. I do want to thank Dark Child Tattoo for removing my 2 tattoos. I get to have a clean slate. Nothing has to be permanent. Thank you, Karen. Dark Child Tattoos and Portraits.
Wow. I didn't know that. That's great. That's a good plug because a lot of people, I'm sure, would love to know.
Yes, tattoo removal, and it's very reasonable, and you get to have a clean slate. Maybe you did something in, you know, youthful indiscretion, I'd like to believe, but that was only 2 years ago. But thank you, Cindy. I'm sorry about your dad.
Oh,
I love you guys, and I'm going to go listen to the rest of the shows over the next week and see what kind of changes we've all made. And remember, kill them with kindness, guys, because it always
great.
Works.
And how about Nicole?
I would just like to thank everybody, just as Kim is, and we're not streaming anymore, so now the listeners that are listening to this podcast, I just want to thank everybody for supporting us and listening to us, because in supporting us, that is your own way to be kind to us, because, you know, we would like to dispense the advice that we dispense, and we would like to share our experiences as a way of being kind to you by giving you that advice and by giving you the lessons that we've learned, and just by you being there and being supportive and listening to us all this time over the course of the past year. You know, it's letting us know that we're saying something that's worth listening to. So I would like to thank all of our listeners, and I would also like to thank David for joining us tonight. I'm very, very happy that he got to bless our listeners with some of his input and with some of his stories as well.
Wow.
And I want to say small acts of kindness can change somebody's life forever, and I love you all.
And David, would you like to say anything before we cut out?
Yeah. I would just say to... First, to Kim and Nicole, thank you for the invitation to come on the show. I feel blessed as well. And to anyone and everyone who's listening, remember, you know, this is coming straight from God, okay? Your best days are still ahead of you, okay? So stay hopeful.
Wow, wonderful. And we'll come up with some exciting topic for next week. If Nicole and Kim have one, or Dave, that they'd like to discuss, email me.
Okay.
Bye.
Will do.
Bye.
I love you all. Good night.
Good night.